Self-driving cars might be the way of the future, but the way the Transportation Department is regulating autonomous traffic means it could be a long way off. One proponent of driverless cars is Paul Brubaker, president and CEO of the Alliance for Transportation Innovation. He finds lots wrong with current policy, and he joins me now with more. And Paul, first of all, before we get to what's going on with the regulatory climate, just give us the broad overview on how close to reality is the driverless car as a mass phenomenon.
Sure. Thanks, Tom, and we're delighted to be here today with you. There's a lot happening in the self-driving space, the autonomous space. Folks are generally aware of some high visibility pilot projects that are occurring in cities like Pittsburgh and in Singapore, where you've got, in the case of Pittsburgh, you've got a fleet of self-driving Uber vehicles that the city has sponsored and has embraced, partially because they've got Carnegie Mellon, who has a world-class robotics lab there and has developed a lot of the underlying technology that enables it. But at the same time, I think it's important to be mindful of the fact that those vehicles that are being used actually have a lot of design features that allow a driver to take over. So these, there's a scale of 1 to 5 in terms of autonomous features that the SAE, the Society for Automotive Engineers, has put out. And essentially, it goes from 0, which is, you know, like your 69 Camaro, which has no self-driving features, to a level 5, which is a fully autonomous vehicle, no brakes, no brake pedals, no steering wheel, no driver, and it can operate in all kinds of weather conditions. Right now, you're seeing some testing of vehicles that are at level 4, which don't have brake pedals or steering wheels, but have some weather limitations. So those are kind of here and now, but the underlying technology isn't perfect, but I think it will be in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Now, the administration has put its weight and its support behind this idea of a driverless or autonomous future, and yet you are arguing that the September 19th regulatory framework, which is still out there for comment, from transportation has got a lot of shortcomings.
Yeah, it does, but at the same time, I want to commend Secretary Fox and the NHTSA Administrator Mark Rosekind for really pushing the envelope, I think, as far as they possibly could have. They are absolutely committed to a self-driving future. I think the administration's absolutely committed. But I think what you saw coming out of the department was the leadership pushing the ball as far as they could in the context of the regulatory process. The regulatory process requires public comments. It requires a docket to be created that makes the case for fundamentally changing the regulations. And our observation was that the department pushed it as far as they could go based on the input that they received. But there's much, they need to go much farther.
What are the issues? How does that limit it?
The policy itself had 4 sections in it. One of the key sections basically discussed the regulatory tools the department will use in order to regulate the deployment of self-driving vehicles. It's predicated on something that came out of the 1966 Federal Highway Safety Act.
The Corvair era.
Yeah, the Corvair era, unsafe at any speed, the Ralph Nader era, that was really kind of focused on dramatically improving safety and survivability in the case of a car crash, right? So what we're talking about now is a fundamental paradigm shift. We're talking about creating vehicles that don't crash. Requires a different mindset. So the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards are the governing set of regulations that determine what process the auto designers, auto manufacturers go through in order to determine roadworthiness, safety. And again, those have some fundamental flaws. The Volpe National Transportation Research Center in Cambridge, Mass. did a scan of the safety standards for compatibility with self-driving and discovered that there are over 260, I believe, references to human drivers, a lot of design features that are mandated, especially in the Series 100 crash avoidance section of the safety standards. They simply don't apply. And if you look at the process that is used, and I got to laugh about it because it's really rooted in the 60s and 70s. It's you've got to make the case for exceptions to the rules. Meanwhile, we're losing 92 people on the highways every day, and that is a tragedy. And we're allowing an old regulatory construct to get in the way of making progress, and the department's well aware of it.
We're speaking with Paul Brubaker, president and CEO of the Alliance for Transportation Innovation. So for the right kinds of regulations to be created, what does DOT need to do instead? Or how can it do it instead?
Well, a lot of it's on organizations like ours. The innovators have to come to the table and make their voice heard. And they were noticeably absent in the initial period, which is why we got the results we got. So it's one of these things where I believe we're going to have to straddle the existing regulatory process.
That's a little surprising, because when you look at the Washington presence of an outfit like Google, which is as much a Washington insider as a Silicon Valley innovator. I mean, Eric Schmidt is at the White House every other day practically for lunch.
Right.
How could that be, I wonder?
Well, it's pretty simple. I think a lot of the companies that come in from the West Coast and you know, traditional innovators look to people who are firmly rooted in the existing regulatory process to help them navigate that. It's like John Hamm's character said in Mad Men, you know, if you don't like the conversation, change it, right? So in this case, we've got to change the regulatory conversation. We need to fundamentally change the regulatory model, quite frankly, to take advantage of modern analytical tools, data science, artificial intelligence, machine learning that can be applied to the regulatory process. In the case of motor vehicle safety, we can begin to look at data in a completely different way. We can be doing modeling and simulation, because we're not going to get a trillion miles of operational data. We've got this weird catch-22.
It's almost like designing a nuclear weapon. You can't test it exactly anymore, but you can model it.
Well, that's a really great analogy, because if you think about it, we've got massive computing capability at the energy labs that can be applied to this very issue. Where we can do, you know, the modeling and simulation, we can do regression where we're testing outcomes based on varying inputs. There's a whole host of modern tools that can be applied to the regulatory process to make it much more agile, make it much more responsive, so that we don't have to wait in the case of getting exceptions to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. If they're complex, it can take a year to get a temporary exemption that's only good for two.
This whole effort reminds me of the drone regulatory process, where the regulations and the way regulations are created seem to be unable to keep up with the advances in technology.
That's right. You know, innovation is outpacing the regulatory process. And what we need to do in a variety of areas, whether it's the self-driving vehicles, whether it's drones, whether it's drug approvals, whether it's even doing things like cancer research, we need to take advantage of these modern tools. And the other thing that we're doing is we're releasing our national strategic framework to advance life-saving self-driving, and we're issuing a version 1.0 of this document. The idea here is that we generate input from the innovation community that will allow us to accelerate the pace of deployment. And I think this is a model, frankly, that can be applied to a lot of other areas in government and to make the process more responsive.
A question on this. I think the big question most people have is, how will autonomous and regular cars coexist for many, many years? Because everyone's not going to junk their car tomorrow and buy a self-driving one.
Yep, indeed. So, and that, frankly, represents one of the biggest technology challenges out there in terms of developing a level of artificial intelligence that can recognize an aggressive driver versus a non-aggressive driver. And there's a lot of development that's going on in this space to prepare us for this mixed, what we call a mixed-use environment, where you've got, you know, self-driving vehicles, you know, sharing the road with
jerks behind the wheel.
With jerks behind the wheel. Exactly right. But that's going to be a very challenging environment. And one of the things that we put in our framework was a recognition that this is going to be a challenging and dangerous time where we've got this mixed use roads. But it was a challenging and dangerous time when horses shared the road with horseless carriages, right? So we've been through this before. It's been a century, so maybe we need to dust off some of the lessons learned from that. But the other thing that we need to be thinking of from a public policy perspective, are there things that we can do to compress that time frame, to shrink it, so that shared environment isn't a lengthy period? We're just laying out the questions. We're not presupposing any rock solid solutions on this, but we are trying to poke the world out there, particularly the innovation community, to chime in on this, because we know that there's a new model, and we want to do everything in our power to expedite that so we can get on with saving lives, because this is really about saving lives and creating transportation opportunities for people who are historically underserved.
And there is the challenge. Paul Brubaker is president and CEO of the Alliance for Transportation Innovation. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We've got links to much more information, and you'll find this interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.